first case, which is United States versus Mar Lopez. And the docket number is 20-1261. And I will turn to Mr. Rouse Chabebo and ask if you are ready to proceed. And when you are ready, please do proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jake Rochebeau for the appellant Rolando Mar Lopez. The district court rejected the party's binding sentencing recommendation in their 11C1C plea agreement and then imposed a two-month increase above the party's recommended range for the express purpose of sending Mr. Mar Lopez a clear message that the judge, not the parties, determines the sentence. In doing so, the district court plainly based the sentence on an impermissible factor. Government does not dispute that increasing a defendant's sentence because of the C1C agreement would be plainly erroneous. And for good reason, it would be wholly unrelated to the legitimate goals of sentencing and would effectively punish a defendant for availing himself of a procedural right. Rather, the disputed issue here is whether that's what the district court actually did.
And well, let me clarify, we're under plain error here, aren't we? So you've got to meet the four prongs of the plain error test. So
yes, Your Honor.
Assuming for a moment that we just assume for purposes of analysis that it's error, where the district court explained that the reason it was doing extending it 2 months was to deter Mr. Mar Lopez from coming back to the United States and thinking he could work out a deal that would make his sentence run concurrently with anything else he had. Isn't it at least not plain that it violated, that it violated the sentencing factors, that it was indeed under a sentencing factor of deterrence?
Your Honor, I think it's at least clear and obvious that simply couching a impermissible factor in terms of deterrence doesn't cure the taint of the original impermissible consideration. Now, in my opening brief, I gave the example that a district court could not say to a defendant that I want to send you a clear message that if you come back, you can never accurately predict what sentence a judge is going to give you. And so to impress upon you that message, I'm going to roll the die to give you a unpredictable sentence. That would clearly be impermissible. I don't think anybody could possibly dispute that basing a sentence enhancement on a roll of the die would be erroneous. And simply saying that, you know, I need you to know this in case you come back and come before another judge, that might have some incidental deterrent effect, but it doesn't cure the original plain error. And here, the original plain error is that you can't increase a defendant's sentence because they availed themselves of this 11C1C plea agreement.
Well, but you're assuming, I mean, you can read the comments of the district court and you can read them as being a permissible reason. I want to deter you from coming back again and again, having an illegal reentry. And you can do it as, I want to somehow discipline you for trying to work out a deal. And when we look at it, it's not clear. I mean, it is fair, isn't it, to say that we could look at it and say that this was a permissible deterrence consideration?
I don't think you could say that it's a permissible deterrence consideration because of the underlying impermissible consideration that it's because he entered a C1C plea agreement. There's no way around the.
Yeah, I'm not sure the court ever says this is because you entered into a C1C agreement. The court says this is because I don't want you to think that you can negotiate a sentence that will protect you from serving more time.
Right. And the only reason there's no way getting around the fact that if it were not for his seeking to bind the court with the 11C1C agreement, he would not have had to send that message. There would be no impetus for the court to increase the sentence by 2 months. So even if he didn't expressly say, I'm increasing it because you had the gall to try to bind my authority, it's still a necessary conclusion that if he had not recommended the 0 to 6 months in the binding C1C agreement, then he wouldn't have gotten that 2 month sentencing increase. That message was a direct and, you know, proximate result of his having sought out the binding plea agreement. And the way that the judge just sort of tacked on this 2 month deterrent enhancement was also impermissible because it just wasn't based on a balanced consideration of the 3553A factors. That is, it's not that the length of the sentence, 6 months, the judge found inadequate. It wasn't that he said parties agree to 6 months. I find that is inadequate, that the length of the sentence, 6 months, is a slap on the wrist that wouldn't sufficiently deter you. It was the mere fact that the parties had recommended that 6 months that the judge found it inadequate because he needed to send this message that I can't accept the party's plea agreement or the recommended sentencing range because that wouldn't be a deterrent, which is to say that if the parties had asked for recommended 0 to 8 months in the C1C, the judge would have rejected that to send the message that to send the exact same message, and he would have received a 10-month sentence. So this increase of 2 months that the court aimed at deterrence was essentially arbitrary. The length of sentence wasn't based on the careful consideration of the 3553A factors. Rather, he just tacked it on to the party's agreement.
Are you suggesting? I'm sorry.
Please.
I was going to say, are you suggesting that the sentence imposed, which was just 2 months more than the agreement of the government suggested in the agreement, wasn't really, the court didn't intend for that 2 months to be a deterrent? What it intended for as a deterrent was that it was rejecting the plea agreement and that it suggesting that the court could do so in the future. So the deterrent factor didn't really apply to the sentence itself. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, Your Honor. It was the deterrence was the, you know, rejection of the party's agreement,
right?
Of the sentencing range, and that sort of manifested in this 2 month enhancement. Because in order to send the message, he couldn't give 6 months because that's what the parties agreed to, but he could tack on this extra 2 months. But it didn't result in a balanced consideration of the 3553A factor.
Yeah. The 3553A2B says that the court can determine or consider the need for the sentence imposed to afford adequate deterrence. So I think what you're suggesting is that the court never considered the need for the additional 2 months to be the deterrent. It considered its actions in imposing the sentence itself to be the deterrent, essentially. Is that, if we assume that that was error because it didn't consider the need for the sentence imposed to afford deterrence, would it be plain error, however? I mean, it was still considering deterrence in general.
Yes, Your Honor, I think it would be plain error for a couple of reasons. I mean, this court has said that that the absence of circuit precedent does not prevent the clearly erroneous application of statutory law from being plain error. So if this is clearly not encompassed within the 3553A factors, then it clearly is an impermissible factor. And the fact that this judge has done what no other district court has done before doesn't insulate it from being plainly erroneous just because there's not a published opinion on point.
And certainly there was ad-libbing by the district court here, and you were pulling the laces tight as far as how you're interpreting what he's saying. I suspect if the district court were listening, it would say that wasn't what I was trying to do at all. But when we talk plain error, we oftentimes do, of course, ask, is there a Supreme Court or Tenth Circuit case on point? And granted, you can look to the clear statute and say that will substitute, but not often is that done. Have you seen a case like this before where there is this kind of ad-libbing on a general 3553A factor adequate deterrence where the court has found plain error? Or are you asking us to do something beyond what a court has done?
I don't think that I can point to a specific case like this, but I also disagree with Your Honor's characterization of what, you know, say the district court was ad-libbing, but particularly in this case, that suggests that he revealed what he was truly thinking. I mean, he prefaced this discussion by telling the defendant essentially, like, I understand that Mr. Mar Lopez doesn't speak English and that he has, you know, some cognitive difficulties. The lawyer had said that, you know, it takes a really long time to explain things to him. And so what the district court said was like, essentially, I'm going to dumb this down and explain to you exactly what I'm thinking. So I think what we're getting is sort of a rare look into exactly what the judge was actually thinking, which is, if I give you this 6 months that the parties are recommending, it's not that 6 months isn't enough. I have to extend by 2 months to send you this clear message that you can't just rely on your 11C1C plea agreement, or as he put it, your lawyers can't save you from a judge. And honestly, I think that if the district court would probably agree that's exactly what he meant, because it's what he told us. I think we assume that he means what he said.
And you almost are asking us to ignore the portions of the transcript where the district court judge very clearly says, I think you're a danger to the community. And it's important given the charge that happened, even though it's not the one I'm sentencing you for. I have to take that into account when we're talking about child sexual assault. And I need to do something to keep you from coming back here and putting children in this country at risk. I mean, that's there too, isn't it?
That's also there. And he did have some general discussion. But I'm not asking you to ignore that. I'm asking you to, you know, take the judge at his word when he says, I mean, he concludes the discussion of explaining why. So he says, so I'm imposing a sentence of 8 months, and you might, to the defendant, you might think all of this for 2 months. And let me tell you exactly why I went 2 months above the party's recommended range. And it was because I need to send you this clear message. And then he concludes that by saying, so I'm only increasing what the lawyers did for debating by two. So he's making it very explicit that the sole reason he's going 2 months above the party's recommendation is to send this clear message that I don't have to follow it. And no other judge, if you come back, has to follow it either.
Well, but then he ends it. I mean, he doesn't stop there. He goes on and he says, so there is a risk to the public if you come back. There is a hell of a risk to you if you come back, which is I'm balancing both things. I want you to understand there's a risk to you if you come back, and it's not something that you can negotiate around. And there's also a risk to the public because of the underlying crime. And so on a plain error analysis, do we ignore the legitimate basis here and say the whole thing gets thrown out? We presume that it's error and it's plain because there's a component of his reasoning that's questionable.
I think that where there is this very explicit component of his reasoning that is impermissible, then yes, then it taints the entire sentence. And I would just ask the court to take the judge at his word when he expressly stated the reason for the 2 month increase. And if I may, I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Very well.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Michael Johnson for the United States. This court should affirm the district court's sentencing decision because Mar Lopez has failed to satisfy the four-part plain error test. First, the district court did not err here. Mr. Mar Lopez's position is that the district court misapplied the law. That is an inaccurate reading of what the district court actually said. The district court never explicitly said it was punishing him for entering into the C1C agreement it never said that its sentence was based on the C1C agreement. Viewing the district court's statements both individually and collectively, and considering the record as a whole, the sentencing transcript reflects that the district court statements primarily focused on deterring Mar Lopez from illegally reentering the country. He had previously reentered the United States four times. This is the record, volume 3 at page 7, paragraphs 11 to 22, four previous times illegally reentering. The district court reiterated several times that deterrence was a significant factor motivating its sentencing decision. This is the record at pages 111 to 112 of volume 4.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute, if I may. The court says it doesn't specifically cite 11C1C, but it says, I want to be clear to you that if you come back, you should not believe that you can have your lawyer work it out with the government lawyer, and whatever gets worked out between the lawyers is going to be good enough. I mean, that seems like a pretty clear focus on not wanting him to rely on the possibility of an 11C1C agreement, doesn't it?
Respectfully, Your Honor, it was not focused solely on the 11C1C agreement. The purpose was disabusing Mr. Mar Lopez of the belief that he could control his sentence, and by the court's main interest was in deterring him from illegally reentering again. And by sentencing him as the court did, the court's focus was on deterring him so that he wouldn't be of the notion that he could again illegally reenter and then obtain a sentence that he could control through a C1C agreement.
Well, counsel, I don't disagree with you that the court made it pretty clear that its reasons behind rejecting the plea agreement and imposing a different sentence was because it wanted to deter. My problem is, how does that correspond with the actual 3553A2B, which says that the court can consider the need for the sentence imposed, in this case, that's the 8 months, right, to afford adequate deterrence. Can you point me anywhere in that pretty lengthy transcript where the district court recognized that the sentence it was imposing, the 8 months versus the 6 months that they had agreed to, or the government agreed to, would somehow be what was affording adequate deterrence? I think it made it very clear that wasn't the point. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's the sentence itself. It's allowed to consider whether the sentence itself will deter future conduct. But that's not what it did here. It considered another basis for deterrence, which is, I'm going to let you know that you shouldn't enter into an 11C1C agreement in the future because some judge might ignore it. That's the basis for its deterrence. Does that make sense? Not the sentence itself?
Your Honor, if I understand your question, the court did state several times the actual message that the court wanted to convey. And that
not with the sentence. It never said that. In fact, it said just the opposite. It basically said, I realize this is only 2 months, but that's not my point. My point is, so you'll know that you can't get away with this basically in the future. Don't come back and think you're going to get an 11C1C agreement. So it recognized that its 2 month increase was not about deterrence. And that's the only thing that the 3553A2B allows the court to consider, is whether the sentence it imposes, the 2 months increase, will deter future conduct.
The court did
say. And that's not what happened here.
The court did say at page 113, volume 4 of the record, quote, I am giving an 8 month sentence due to the seriousness of the risk that is faced by the public were he to return. The court specifically said that. And that indicates that the court's purpose in the 8-month sentence was to deter his return and to protect the public due to the seriousness of the risk if he were to again illegally reenter.
I agree it said that in its conclusion, but it made very clear, I think, as Pound's counsel has said, that you may be wondering, what's all this fuss about for only 2 months? Why would I do this for only 2 months? Well, here's why I'm doing this. I'm doing this so you will know. If you come back, don't think you're going to enter into an 11C1C and get a shorter sentence because some judge might just throw the book at you. It made it very clear that it wasn't about the 2 months. In fact, it said, yeah, you know, I know that's not much, but that's not my point. My point is this, and I'm asking you, other than that last line where it sums everything up, I don't see anywhere where it suggested that that difference between 6 and 8 months was going to be a deterrent factor here.
Your Honor, pages 111 and 112 of the record, as well as pages 92, 93, and 113 of the record, indicate that the judge was sentencing him to 8 months to deter him. The court's interest in deterrence is related to the court's interest in disabusing him of the idea that he could control his sentence in a future C1C. Deterrence is related to the court's statement that he couldn't control his sentence. The court essentially said, I don't want you to again illegally reenter because you think you can get a deal. I want the court was essentially saying, I want you to understand that a future judge is going to be the one who's going to sentence you if you legally reenter again.
Right. I get all that. I understand. I think the judge made it very clear what his intent was. And that's my point. It didn't seem to be about the length of the sentence imposed. It's about the fact that the judge, not the parties, decide what the sentence is. And that was the deterrent effect in this case, not the sentence itself.
Your Honor, the court initially indicated why it was rejecting the 11C1C agreement. And this is at volume 4, pages 71 and 81 of the record. The court indicated it was rejecting the C1C because the court said, I'm not going to be bound by the limited options I'm presented with. And the court at page 71 said, I'm not going to restrict myself to a range of 0 to 6 months of additional time. So the court explained why it was rejecting the C1C. It wasn't going to limit itself to 0 to 6 months. It didn't indicate that it was rejecting the C1C simply because the parties had entered into the C1C agreement. The court's later decision to sentence him to 8 months was to deter him from the notion that he could control a sentence before a future judge.
Is that proper? I would understand your argument better if you were saying the extra 2 months of consecutive time was to make him rethink it when he is in Mexico and deciding whether he wants to come across the border. But to say to rethink that the judge is going to operate in a certain way, that's deterrence. I don't really follow that. Why couldn't he have just deterred by imposing 21 months within the guideline consecutively?
Well, the court viewed a 21-month consecutive sentence as not appropriate under the circumstances, that wasn't necessary to deter the defendant from illegally reentering again.
Does that matter? Does it matter that the court could have awarded or imposed a 21-month consecutive sentence within the guidelines, and all in the name of deterrence, and pretty good deterrence too? We wouldn't be arguing whether that was deterrence or not if you're serving that much extra time. That if the court could do that, it surely can do what it did here, which is less.
If the court properly weighed the 3553A factors and determined that a lengthy sentence would not be appropriate, and the court did not want to sentence the defendant based on his prior child sexual abuse convictions. The court was focusing on sentencing him for the conviction here, which was illegally reentering the United States. If I could just address Judge McHugh's comments during Mr. Rochebeau's argument, the court's statements here can be read as suggesting deterrence. I don't think that the parties dispute that, given the multiple instances in the record where the court mentions deterrence as a significant factor in its decision. But it's not absolutely clear to this court that, in fact, the district court was punishing him or setting the 8-month sentence solely as a rejection of the C1C agreement. It's not plain or obvious or unambiguous. And so even if this court were to find that the first two factors of the plain error test had been met, Mr. Mar Lopez cannot satisfy the third or the fourth factors in the plain error test. He can't show that the error was plain. He can't satisfy the second factor. He can't show that the error was plain, that it's unambiguous, or that the law plainly prohibits the error. So he can't show that it was plain or unambiguous under the second part of the test. He can't satisfy the third or the fourth parts of the test either. He can't show a reasonable probability that but for the error, the outcome of the proceedings would have been different. That's the third part or the fourth part.
Let me interrupt you for a minute. If we say the error was extending it 2 months for the sole purpose of doing something different than the 11C1C agreement, and we say that's error and we find it's plain, if he hadn't committed that error, I think there's a reasonable probability the court would have just accepted the 11C1C.
I disagree, Your Honor.
I'm challenging on prong three.
Right. I understand. I disagree. And that's because the court stated why it was rejecting the C1C. And this, again, is at volume four of the record, pages 71 and 81. The court said it didn't want to be limited to that. To that option. It didn't want to restrict itself to the range of 0 to 6 months. That was at the first sentencing hearing. And then at the continued sentencing hearing after that time, then the court issued its ultimate sentence. So the court had already indicated that it wasn't going to be restricted to the limited options in the C1C, and it was rejecting the C1C. And so therefore, if for this court to find that the third or the fourth prongs would be met, the district court would essentially be back to sentencing within approximately 0 to 6 months, and the court had already rejected that. So the court's statements at the first sentencing hearing show that the defendant cannot satisfy the third or the fourth prongs of the plain error test. I'm happy to answer any other questions that the court may have. Thank you. We ask that the sentence be affirmed.
Thank you. Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. I submit that it is clear and obvious that the 2-month enhancement was based solely on this, you know, rejection of the plea agreement to send that clear message, as the district court stated. But even if as counsel has argued, that the goal of deterrence, as he certainly talks about throughout, also played some part in that. That doesn't mean that the impermissible consideration was still. All we have to show is that was there's a reasonable probability that he would have received a different sentence. So there's a reasonable probability that 2-month increase was based on this impermissible consideration. That's all Mr. Mar Lopez needs to show. I submit he can show a lot more than that.
Can I ask, I, The court starts out its presentment of the sentence by saying, I'm mindful of the fact that I am required by law to impose a sentence which is sufficient but not greater than necessary to achieve the purposes of sentencing as described in 18 U.S.C. 3553. And then it goes on to announce the 8 months. It seems to me in our case law, when the court does that, we typically take the court at its word and say that it did exactly what it said it was doing, which was trying to find a sentence that was within those factors. I guess my problem is when you have this kind of these statements on the record, you know, you're asking us to ignore all the ones that are permissible reasons and to focus on the one that you say is impermissible and to say that it is plain without any case law that's ever said that. And I'm struggling with that.
Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time, but if I could just briefly respond. You're absolutely right. At the beginning, he does say at the outset that I'm mindful of this and does give sort of a rote recitation of what the purpose of sentencing is. But it's his later comments where he distills exactly what he's doing in the most simple terms to he reveals that it's not solely based on proper consideration of the 3553A factors. And rather than Mr. Mar-Lopez having to prove that the impermissible, that the error was the sole basis of the sentence, it's just the opposite. If the sentence was based in part on this impermissible factor, then that is enough to show that there was a plain error that reasonably affected that there's a reasonable probability that without that impermissible consideration, there would have been a lesser sentence. Thank you, Your Honors, and I'd ask to remand for resentencing.
Thank you, counsel, for your helpful arguments. The case is submitted.